Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Dead Rock Stars with Mick Wall and Joel McIver.
All right, I'm going to start this week, so let me start with a really, you know, exciting way of putting this. Welcome to another edition of Dead Rock Stars with me and a man I consider an old friend in the sense that he's not anymore, Joel McIver.
Former friend.
And this week, we're going to be doing Elvis Presley.
Right, hey, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Elvis Presley, I'm so excited about this. I mean, he's probably the artist that I fear we won't be able to fit into 45 minutes most.
Well, there's no reason we have to fit it into 45 minutes, you know, if 10 will do.
I like it. He had the same philosophy when it came to cheeseburgers.
He certainly did. Let's start at the beginning.
The first book I ever read about music was? No. It was that bloody Albert Goldman biography of Elvis.
Oh, really?
Which I think was just called Elvis. Came out in the mid-80s when I was a teenager, and I read it out of curiosity. And my God, anyone listening to this who's read it will be shaking their heads in sympathy at this point, because have you read it?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, my God, it's this absolute evisceration of poor old Elvis the pelvis.
But Goldman made a career out of that. He did another one on Lennon.
He did, yeah. And he was doing one on Morrison when he died, right?
I don't know what he was doing at that point, no. But I met Goldman and interviewed him.
What was he like?
New York Jewish intellectual, mm-hmm. Very good writer, came from the jazz age. I think, you know, if he'd been honest, he'd have admitted his Elvis book and his Lennon book lacked a personal connection because he came from an earlier era. You've got to stop drinking and eating while we're doing this because we can hear you.
Silently.
It doesn't work. His first book had been a biography of Lenny Bruce. Mm-hmm. Amazing book, particularly the opening chapter. That came out in the sort of late 70s. And he clearly really enjoyed Lenny Bruce, didn't flinch from telling the dirty stuff, but got Lenny Bruce. He got Lenny Bruce. Mm. I don't think he got the Beatles. And as for Elvis, you know, there have been some other books written on Elvis that are deeply brilliant about his early career.
Guralnik?
Yeah, absolutely. Mystery Train.
Yeah.
That takes it up to when Elvis goes into the army. And then there's a second book which covers the next period. Mm-hmm. But there have been some fabulous books written. Grail Marcus, of course, wrote a great Elvis book. Mm-hmm. There have been many like that. The guy, Jerry Hopkin, who co-wrote No One Here Gets Out Alive, he wrote a great Elvis biography on the suggestion of Jim Morrison. Because Jim and Jerry were actually friends. Mm. Whereas Danny
Sugarman.
Yeah, Danny was like 12 years old when Jim Morrison was around. Mm. Jerry was older and was a contemporary writing for Rolling Stone.
Yeah.
And they both loved Elvis. You know, Jim Morrison worshipped Elvis. Mm-hmm. And it was Jim's idea that Jerry should do that. So Goldman's thing was kind of, you know, sold as a corrective. You know, what else can you say about Elvis? Well, I'll tell you about all the
less appealing aspects of his personality.
Yes, because in context, you know, pre-social media, pre all these music documentaries we're now used to seeing, pre all the revealing biographies that now exist, back in the 70s, I mean, there's one fantastic detail Goldman came up with he came up with many, but one in particular always sticks in my mind, where, because Elvis was a junkie.
Yes.
But at the same time, Elvis, you know, was anti-drugs. Mm. And he justified it in his mind by getting prescriptions from doctors.
Yes.
He justified shooting up painkillers by the fact that he didn't tie up his arm and hit a vein. Yeah. He, what we call, popped. He muscle popped. And Goldman said, had a red dye been put over Elvis's corpse just to show the pinpricks, it would have covered his entire body.
Well, so when I read that book as a kid, my overweening impression when I walked away was that it was just one massive tragedy. And I know that's not the whole story, so that's what we're going to explore now. Right, I have to ask you, first of all, are you a fan of Elvis Presley's work?
Absolutely. Yeah. I grew up in the 60s, and
I thought you were going to say you grew up in Tupelo, Mississippi.
Well, I was born in Tupelo, Mississippi, a poor black child. But by the 60s, I was living in London, and I joined the Beatles. And Elvis was an ever-present.
All over the radio?
Yeah, I mean, some of my earliest musical memories, because when you're a child, you know, Elvis singing Teddy Bear is no less relevant than Elvis singing Jailhouse Rock.
Right, no, totally. But Did you watch the films out of interest?
Yeah. Mm. I mean, but don't forget, I grew up in a world where there were two TV channels. So there might be, you know, a Labour Party political broadcast on one side, and on the other side, Blue Hawaii.
Yeah.
So what are you going to watch? And they were fun. People go on and like, oh, it was really weird. They were fun.
They have something, don't they?
It's like Cliff Richard doing Summer Holiday or Tommy Steele doing whatever the hell he did, you know. Yeah. They weren't meant to be movies for the ages. It wasn't Marlon Brando mumbling into his chest. You know, this was Elvis with a load, load of girls in short skirts driving fast cars by the beach, because each movie was exactly the same as the one before. I mean...
Yeah, in this one, he's a racing car driver and needs a new engine.
Yeah.
In this one, he's a mechanic who needs enough money to marry his girlfriend.
Called Jed.
Yeah, that's it.
Hey, Jed.
I know.
Barbie's here.
One of the nuggets of information I got from Goldman's book was that by the end of his movie career, they were taking 17 days to get the whole thing done. Not just shot, but completely done, produced, ready.
Yeah, and probably moaning that it took so long. He'd do whole albums in a morning, you know.
Yeah. Again, his cultural penetration was massive, right? He was the global star. Right?
He had a lot of penetration. Hey, listen, Elvis Presley... It brings us on to an interesting point. Elvis had to be one of the most beautiful looking men that ever lived. You know, people go on about Rudolph Valentino, but all you see are these sort of hawk-nosed profiles in old black and white movies going at the wrong speed. And you go, I get it, good-looking Arab.
Yeah.
Dr. Zhivago.
Yeah, right.
You know. Then you get to Elvis, who is the living embodiment of Adonis.
Super, super handsome chap.
Plus an incredible voice.
Mm.
Dead rock stars. So much love.
To go back to the beginning.
Back to the start.
The beginning.
Born in 1935, John Lennon said, who was himself born in, 40, 41, that before Elvis there was nothing. So in context of Elvis getting big in, the mid-50s, I guess there probably was not. So, right, I know a bit about his school years, you know, he was an ambitious kid, ended up not very clever, came from terrible poverty. Was, again, quoting Goldman, incredibly in love with his mother.
Aren't we all, Charles?
Well, we are, and rightly so. Led to some sort of unusual scenes later in life, which I'm sure we'll come to.
I hope so, because I don't know what they are.
Started quaffing his hair up at the age of 15 in that incredible way.
Didn't we all, Charles?
We tried. Certainly tried. Ended up being a truck driver, did he not, right?
And then didn't we all,
the
Charles?
Day came when he popped into that record shop to cut some sides of him singing, right? That was what you did.
Mainly to do a birthday present for his mum,
So that was what it was, right? Yeah. So that was when he first became musical. He had this incredible unschooled voice. Like you, I'm sure, I know a few snobs who say, I'll only listen to Elvis's Sun Studios oeuvre.
Well, that's like the people that go, oh yeah, I like New York, but I hate LA. You know, they've just heard people say it, so they say it. They don't know what the fuck they're talking about.
I'll only listen to Miles Davis pre-Kind of Blue.
Yeah. Well, no, including Kind of Blue.
All right, yeah, pre-Bitches Brew, probably, you know, that kind of pre-electric. Well, you know, pre-Dylan Go Electric. Yeah. Well, people have their bloody opinions, don't they?
Yeah, on the corner, people have always dizzed, but that to me is
an iconic, true exemplar of
an arse-shaped asteroid.
Envelope being pushed.
Up my nose.
Exploding onto the sun.
So... Elvis,
Pelvis,
he has this kind of regional career with Sam Phillips at Sun Studios. Distribution is king, So unless you can actually distribute your records into stores in New York, and
they know damn good, boy.
Well, no one knows you exist. You know, people forget America is incredibly vast continent, so you can be very, very popular in certain states and completely unknown, particularly in those days.
Right.
Unless you get on national TV.
Good old days.
I mean, there's not even a thing such as national radio, you know. It's impossible because of the time differences and everything. But so he has a string of kind of local hits. He goes on the road.
Which was, what, 54, that kind of time?
Around about that
early
time.
On,
53 is probably the earliest.
When he was, you know, he was only 18, 53.
That's all right, my mama.
Oh, I love that song. That's all right, you. So, okay, so what... Sam Phillips, the owner of the Sun...
That's all right.
Club style.
That's all right.
So that's all right, Mama. What was it Sam Phillips said? He said, if I could get... I can't remember. You probably know the quote better than I do. If I could get black music...
I can get a white kid that seems like a black man.
A black man, then I'll make money out of it, words to that effect. Zip. Sam Phillips. No, keep it in. Keep all this in. Sam Phillips had this idea.
It's more interesting to keep it in. Let's not pretend we know what the fuck we're on about.
Sam Phillips had this idea.
Famously said.
He could combine black music sung by a white man and make a lot of money out of it, right?
Which takes us all up to Eminem.
It does. Thank you for that.
It's a whole history of pop music right there. If you can get a white boy
cultural
to sing black music, then you've got yourself a big mainstream hit.
A bit like when UB40 did Red, Red, Wine.
Very much so. I think they kind of epitomise the appropriation of the black cultural milieu. Red, red wine. Written by who? Famous Rastafarian. Neil Young. No, not Neil Young. Neil Diamond. Neil Diamond. Neil Diamond. Neil Young's always tried to take credit for that. Fuck that guy. It was big Neil Diamond.
Neil Young. And also, Chris Rea had Down on the Beach and Neil Young had On the Beach. Coincidence?
I think not.
Also, Testament and David Bowie both had albums called Low. Coincidence?
I think not. So Elvis,
the pelvis,
has got a rocking good career. He doesn't have to work. He doesn't have to work. But he doesn't have to do a regular job.
Yeah, yeah. And we jump forward a bit, but right? We've only just got him doing That's All Right, Mama.
This is what I'm talking about. That period.
Right.
Okay.
What was that period?
I'm trying to tell you. Mm. So. He's working every night. He's in the station wagon. He's doing shows. He's
Grand Ole Opry in Nashville.
All that stuff. Mm. But that's as far as it can go. You know, Sam Phillips is a local guy who's doing really nicely, thank you. Mm. The man who comes along with the plan is Colonel Tom Parker.
Oh, fuck. When did he come along?
At this particular juncture. He comes along and says, right, I can turn this schmuck into a buck. And long story short, because we could spend hours just on this one year,
I know,
you know.
We could. And on Colonel Tom Parker.
Colonel Tom Parker comes along and negotiates deals with RCA. Mm. Sam gets a nice payoff, yada, yada. But what's the big breakthrough national hit that RCA released?
I'm going to say Heartbreak Hotel.
Well, hit my baby. Yeah, you bet. Here you go.
Is it actually that song? Was that right?
My shoulders are going now. You see, you can't sing the song without doing an Elvis.
It's so catchy.
It
was that song.
It is, and it changed. When Heartbreak Hotel exploded onto the scene, it changed the face of music
forever. Nothing would ever be the same.
Nothing would ever be the same.
Oh, my God.
But in this case... It's true. It's like the Big Bang explosion in rock music. Let's not forget, you had Little Richard, you had Chuck Berry.
Carl Perkins.
Absolutely. You had Bill Haley, you know, very influential.
Did you ever see the photo of the Million Dollar Quartet?
Oh, with Johnny Cash.
Johnny Cash.
Elvis.
Carl Perkins.
Jerry Lee Lewis.
Jerry Lee Lewis must have been.
They're the killer boy.
Lovely man.
Killer.
Love to meet him.
Killer boy.
There are four of them are pictured sitting at the piano in Sam Studios.
Yeah.
I don't know if they record. Oh, they did record because there's a little bit of music that you can hear. But nothing ever coalesced other than that. Amazing, really.
Well, it's a bit like those early pictures of Mustaine, Ulrich, Hetfield.
Burton.
And another bloke who never made it. You know,
that's right.
It's very
it
similar.
It is like that.
Somewhat. That's the $100
quartet. Yeah, they were $150. $120 plus change.
So, Colonel is what they call a carny.
Yeah, yeah, he was a Dutch immigrant, was he not?
Yes, but they didn't know that. They just knew him as a guy that looked like Colonel Sanders. The hat, the cigar. you know, yes, they found out later he was a Dutchman, didn't have a passport. If he left the United States, he'd never get back in. He's basically a con man. He's like Del Boy writ large, but in America.
He made Elvis's career, though, right?
Well, he certainly gave him the opportunity to become a huge star, I mean, he negotiated the deal with RCA. Suddenly he is doing TV and national radio.
And what happened when he did TV?
Well, he exploded onto the scene.
His penis exploded onto the scene and was not allowed to be shown.
According to the news, well, they said his hips, didn't they?
Well, hips, penis.
Swivel hips. Yeah.
He was only pictured from the waist up because the sight of his gyrating pelvis. A whole generation of girls melted, apparently.
Well, it was depraved. It would deprave them. They would become depraved and run around the streets, exploding onto
the
scene.
Holding burning torches and like setting houses on fire. I love it.
Yeah. Which is actually true. Let's be fair. Let's be fair. That would have happened. But at the same time, John Lennon, Robert Plant, Bob Dylan, a whole generation of people.
Bowie.
Yeah, absolutely, Bowie. Everybody that was young and had never seen this before, this was like the first man on the moon, you know. No one even knew there was a moon until Elvis landed on it, you know?
I do like your astronomical metaphors. You've already said that it was like the Big Bang.
Well,
now you're saying it's like the moon.
Yeah,
well... I want you to invoke a galaxy at some point.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So, when did he make it over here? I mean, when was
same
he first...
Same time. 55? Heartbreak Hotel.
55, 56.
Something like that.
I think it was 55, 56. Was he ever here?
Well, they can Google, can't they? That needn't detain us. The point is, he had a couple of years there where he was hotter than a pistol. You know, it wasn't just a case of... So that when Mark Bolan becomes famous, or John Lennon becomes famous, or Axl Rose, or you know, Lars Ulrich, who was born famous, you know.
Shanks and Bigfoot.
You got it. There were no rock idols before Elvis. Before Elvis, the nearest was probably Frank Sinatra in his Bobby Sox years.
Yeah, all that kind of crooning Perry Como stuff.
Yeah, which was for the girls.
Pleasant.
Girls would scream at that, you know.
Mm. What did the lads listen to then, back then?
Jazz, yeah.
Right,
Charlie Parker.
Louis Armstrong, Duke Ellington, okay, right. Yeah.
Miles Davis.
Yeah, right, okay. That was what the lads listened to.
But they also listened to Little Richard and stuff, but those were race records, and you could only listen to them on race stations. Black.
It's mad, isn't it?
These days they call them urban. There's always a word for black. It's urban, it's race, you know.
I know.
It's ghettoized.
There's no rural music, is there?
Well, there is. They call it country.
No, but I meant, like, for me, growing up in Somerset, near a pig farm.
Oh, there is. It's called the Wurzels.
You cannot talk about Elvis.
I've got a brand new combine harvester. I heard you went from the Wurzels to Metallica. Mm. And I can
overnight.
See that. I can see that. I see the connection.
It's because a combine harvester is metal.
Right? There you go. There you go. And being a pig fucker, that's also metal. So Elvis, from his pig fucking background, ends up the biggest star in America and the world. And then comes this bizarre, seemingly bizarre moment where he goes into the army.
1957.
People say, he was inducted, called up. Bullshit.
What happened?
Colonel Tom Parker put him into the army.
Why did he do such a thing?
That's the question. That's the $64 billion question.
And what's the $64 billion answer?
Well, there's only theories. The theory is, because they had him recording shitloads of material before he went in.
It was only, what was it, a year away, 2 years?
2 years.
In Germany?
Yeah, where he meets Priscilla.
Oh, yeah,
where
he
meets
14-year-old
Priscilla. Which is like marrying age in Tupelo, you know. I mean, that's grandmother
six
age
kids
in Tupelo.
By then.
Yeah. Yeah, you're in your grave by then. But the theory, the modern theory, changes over the years, of course. The modern theory is that Elvis really, really did explode onto the scene, as it were. He was becoming beyond the Colonel's control.
Ah.
I mean, serious, serious money and interest from people all over the world. Being a very rich white guy connected to major corporations, you're not going to get drafted into the army unless... you want to be. He did it as a huge publicity stunt.
Yeah.
On one level, a superficial level, it kills off the he's a degenerate, he's a subversive, commie-baiting pig fucker. You know, on a more deep level, it gives the colonel a level of, retains a level of control that goes beyond. I mean, goes beyond. I mean, the hair, the symbolic hair being
cut
off.
They filmed him getting his sideburns shaved off, didn't they?
And when he came back, the first big gig the Colonel got him was to appear on the Frank Sinatra show. Huh. Sinatra hated Elvis, like regarded him as scum. You know, because Sinatra came from a sophisticated New York, you know, mafia connected.
Drink your highball and look smart with your suit on.
Hey, you. I need to knock my water over.
Oh, nearly spilled
my drink. I mean my Jack. I need to knock my Jack over into my Coke.
But my Harvey Wallbanger. I do like a Harvey Wallbanger. Harvey Wallbanger, is it me too? Is that what you just said?
Yeah, Harvey Wallbanger. Did Harvey Wallbanger have you in a room?
No, I'm with you. I think I'm fine.
Did he promise you a podcast if you just knelt down?
I promised you a podcast.
He did, didn't he? Minds. See, if you don't say no, that means yes.
I'm just improvising
so,
at this point.
So, he comes Presley, back, though. But Sinatra hates Elvis. He hates everything he stands for. You know, who is this jerk, you know? I'm with Nelson Riddle and his orchestra. I do quality shit. And I've been around a long time. Screaming Girls, I had them. I'm beyond that. I do movies. But even at this point, Sinatra is smart enough to realise, you know, a bit like Mark Bolan getting the Damned on tour. You know, let's get the new sensation on my show and we can cross-pollinate our credibility
Symbiosis.
And our audience.
Yeah, right, good.
So,
good. I like where this is going.
So the Colonel sees all this and seizes on it, and Elvis just does what the fuck he's told because he's a good boy. He says, yes, sir, no,
ma'am. Uneducated Southern lad,
yes, sir, no, ma'am. You bet.
Right, yes, sir.
You bet, sir. You bet, ma'am. And that leads us into the 60s where two things happen. The Beatles come along, who suddenly make Elvis look as prehistoric as a dinosaur. And again, the Colonel sees this as, that's okay, because we're going to go to Hollywood and make a load of cheesy movies and make a load of big bucks.
Albert Goldman's conclusion was that Elvis never wanted to be a rock star, he wanted to be a movie star. And whether or not that's true, I could not possibly say.
Can I just check, is Albert Goldman the only thing you've ever read on Elvis?
No, I read
Chronics. Because we seem to be reference him rather a lot.
Well, yes, you're quite right, I am doing, and that's not because I haven't read other Elvis books, it's because it was the first music book I read and it made this huge impact on me.
Clearly.
Yeah, no, I remember every page.
Thank you very much.
So through all this, I mean, he was making insane amounts of music, right? Partly because a lot of it was the film soundtrack.
Yeah, nonsense, right? A hula hula baby.
Okay, what I want to ask is, when did he become a meme, you know, a trope, a joke, it's fat Elvis, you know, rich in his mansion taking drugs?
Well, not till the 70s.
Okay, we'll come to the Singer Special in 68, which was amazing.
The 60s is still a malleable time. I mean,
right.
You know, he'd made King Creole, Jailhouse Rock. These are very credible movies.
Yeah.
There comes a kind of sliding doors moment where he can be Montgomery Clift, Marlon Brando, James Dean. Maybe not the same acting talent, but certainly those kind of movies.
Yeah.
Or he can become, you know, the people say Cliff was the English Elvis. Well, the early 60s, Elvis becomes the American Cliff, you know, the American Tommy Steele. I mean,
Sid James, the famous South African comedian.
From Australia, yeah. His name's Sydney. What more do you need?
Come on.
Fait accompli.
His name's not Johannesburg, is it, after all?
Hey! So there are serious filmmakers that want to make these movies with Elvis.
Yeah.
But the Colonel stimmies it because what he sees is things beyond his ken. He doesn't want people that work with Brando and Montgomery Clift mixing with Elvis because the first thing they're going to do is say, lose the fucking Colonel.
Yeah.
Fucker can't read a book, let alone a script. Mm. Fucker doesn't know who Stanley Kubrick is, but he knows how to get a crazy chicken dance going and charge you $100 a piece, you know. He's an old carny that lucks the fuck out with...
Did people actually say this, have this conversation with Elvis, do you think?
What, get rid of
lose the idiot?
Absolutely. Of course they did. I don't think they use the words lose the idiot so much as... I mean, I'll give you an example. You mentioned the 68 comeback special. The big bone of contention for the Colonel while they were doing that, and for people that don't know, you can see it on YouTube, he's out of a movie contract because his movies have now started selling less and less and less, so the studio actually drops him. The Colonel confects to get him a residency at Las Vegas, which even these days is considered the graveyard slot, you know.
Yep.
But back then, well, what are you, Dean Martin? Sammy Davis? You know, and those are the cutting edge guys of Vegas. You know, really, you're talking Pat Boone.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking, you know, the end of the road, except he's still a young man.
Yeah.
But almost by accident comes this offer to make a Christmas special. And the guys that made the 68 special, as it became, were Elvis fans. And they were the ones that talked him into putting on the leathers. They were the ones that worked with him on trying to get a live band. And at one point, the Colonel, and I wish I could remember the director, producer's name of the city. Google it, fans.
Ian, put it in mixed voice.
Put it in like that, Ian.
Steve Binder, baby.
And Elvis and this guy get summoned to the colonel's office, and the guy recalls it as Elvis, like, "Yes, sir, yes, sir," a little boy. And in there, the colonel's sitting with a big cigar going, "It has come to my attention that while you've been making this fucking thing, whatever you're making, you have not done a Christmas song. Get a fucking Christmas song done." And Elvis like, "Yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir. Elvis is leaving the office. Yes, sir, yes, sir."
So himself a Christmas song.
Christmas song.
That's
a much better impersonation.
Rudolph for a nose reindeer. Yeah. Playing a ring.
What would it be like if Elvis met...
Metallica?
No, met Bill.
Bill who?
Ward.
Well, hi there, Bill. My name's Elvis. I'm from Mississippi. Who are you?
Hello, Elvis. Fucking hell.
That's not very good.
You a fan of my work, boy?
Yes, I am. I think it's wonderful. Hello, Ponza. Hello, Elvis.
Can I just say, Bill Ward is a friend of mine. I feel guilty about saying that.
Oh, you're a friend of yours. You haven't got any fucking friends, and neither has Bill.
Here, so Elvis does the...
He's such a suck-ass, isn't he?
I am.
Ooh, Bill Ward's a friend of mine.
I am. So he did the same special...
I saw Bill. He went,
there,
Joel, I've never fucking met a bloke called Joel.
And who...
Fuck that guy.
And what, pray, was the Christmas song that Elvis performed at the Singer Special?
I don't fucking know. Christmas, you know. Blue Christmas.
Put your stockings on the tree.
See, now that's an Elvis impersonation.
I thought that was all right,
That was very good,
Not too bad, man.
The point being, to circle back, is that they went ahead and made this thing. The Colonel didn't even watch it, you know, just made the money. But after it, there was such a great reaction.
Yeah, well, it is amazing.
Because it's 1968, the year that album sales overtake singles for the first time. The year that, you know, the Beatles, the Doors...
French Revolution, or rather not French Revolution,
the student revolution in
Paris.
The French Revolution occurs, you know.
The student revolution in Paris.
But also San Francisco, London, the death of Martin Luther, the death of Bobby Kennedy.
Martin Luther King, they're two different people.
Martin Luther King Jr., if you want to be a twat
Martin
about
Luther
it.
Was the responsible for the Protestant church.
Yeah, and Martin Luther King was Martin Luther King Jr.'s dad. Okay, so fuck that guy!
Martin Luther Prince, surely, in that case. Martin Luther Prince Rogers Nelson. What are you talking about, Mick? Come on. So this went out and people
liked
it.
So this is 1968. So it goes out, gets a great reaction. And the producer, through him, ends up taking Elvis to a studio where in the space of 48 hours, they cut Suspicious Minds, In the Ghetto, a whole bunch of amazing stuff that will hold him in good stead for the next 2 or 3 years. And at that point, they were talking about literally a proper Elvis is back, the special, the records. And at that point, the Colonel stepped in and forbid Elvis from ever working with that record producer again, because Elvis was getting excited. Elvis wanted to tour the world. Another big no. Any chance that anybody could come along and make Elvis a better offer, which almost anybody could, because the Colonel's commission from Elvis was 50%.
Yeah.
But that was only on paper. You know, famously in Las Vegas, the powers that be in Vegas, you know, Johnny No Nose and Larry the Donkey.
Tiny Bob.
And
the joke being that he's massive.
Crazy Vinny.
Yeah, yeah.
Vinny the Shark.
Mad Eye Moody.
Said to the Colonel, okay, we want Elvis for, say, 50 shows in 28 days.
Yeah.
We will offer $3 million.
Yeah.
And the Colonel would say, well, that's fine for me, but what are we going to pay the boy? And they would literally have to go, oh, right, okay, well, that $3 million's for you.
Yeah.
He also had an unlimited tab in the casino.
That's it, yeah.
Meanwhile, Elvis goes from this, it's a false dawn, what appears to be this incredible renaissance in his career. You know, 58, he's in the army. 68, he's got the comeback special. And all these great new songs. Brilliant new songs.
Young man, 33 years old, looked shit hot on that Singer special.
Went from shit hot to shit in about 3 years.
Yeah.
Burned out. I mean, he did start touring America.
Mm.
But it was in patches, you know, like 6 weeks, a few weeks off, 6 weeks. His personal life starts to unravel. Priscilla, content to live in the gilded palace of Graceland, walks out with the karate instructor.
Yes.
Mike Stallner. A jackass.
Anyway, fit lad, unlike Elvis. So Priscilla, we should backtrack a tiny bit, if you don't mind. Graceland, I mean, it's this icon of ridiculousness. When did he acquire and move into it and turn this giant, terrible, floating, you know...
Well, it kind of came about, you know, I mean... 65. When he first had it, Mum and Dad lived there. Dad still lived there, Vernon, after Elvis died. You know, it's in Memphis. It's kind of just going from your backyard to the biggest place you can possibly find to buy just outside your backyard.
The Beatles showed up there, didn't they? They had a little jam.
Everybody showed up there. Mm. You know, I mean, all these groups paid fealty. Is that how you say it? Fealty?
That's
fealty?
Good enough for me.
Fealty?
It's like that.
To Elvis. Especially, if you recall, Spinal Tap.
Yes, indeed.
The great scene in the movie where they go to Graceland and they're standing around his grave and they're going, ah, trying to get into it. Ah, since my baby left me. No, ah, see, no, see. Since my baby left me.
Dead rock stars. Too much fucking perspective.
Where the hell are we going?
Well, we're talking about Elvis Presley.
We are, that's right.
A very famous singer in the 20th century.
That's it. He was big and he came back in 68.
We're talking about how the 60s, it still could have gone right for him. But the Colonel Tom Parker, it becomes this almost demonic force. You know, there are stories of before he would go on stage each night, the Colonel in Vegas... The Colonel would go into a private room with him. Mm. And being an old carny, he used to do hypnosis and all kinds of things. There were very well-founded stories, including in your famous Albert Goldman book, of the Colonel hypnotizing him every night.
Jesus.
There were endless stories of people coming to Elvis with offers to do great stuff, and Elvis saying, absolutely, I'm absolutely, talk to the Colonel, and the Colonel basically having them thrown out. Because the Colonel wasn't interested in, can Elvis do good work? Could Elvis be a legend on the same magnitude of all the other amazing entertainers, artists of
or
the era?
Or even make him equivalent money, right? You know, this was the era, if I'm right, when bands started playing stadiums and reaping tons and tons of cash.
Yes.
He didn't really do that to the way he could have done.
No, definitely not, because it would have meant ceding a certain amount of control.
Yeah.
And he was terrified that the minute Elvis actually got a peep outside the cage, he would fly. Which is probably what would have happened. So instead you get this ever-decreasing...
Yeah, circle. Spiral or whatever.
Of
grimness.
To the point where, you know, how bad was it? You know, there are these terribly sad YouTube clips of Elvis in the last year of his life.
Oh.
And he's on stage and he's clearly overweight, wearing the cape and the suit. But it's not the appearance that upsets you. It's the fact that he... barely string a sentence.
Can't sing, his voice is shot.
Yeah, and he's just making these crappy jokes. It's as if you've found the drunkest pop singer on a bad night. But because it's Elvis, people are kind of laughing it off and so forth.
68, he was peaking. I mean,
golden.
He does make some slightly crappy jokes on that thing, but that's because he was improvising on stage, I think. He sat down, he played beautifully, sang amazingly, looked ace. 9 years later, he was dead. So how do you go from that to being... an awful parody of what you had been before?
Well, 9 years is longer than the Beatles were together to have hits.
33 years of age to 42 years of age.
Nine years is just short of what Zeppelin managed in their entire career. So it's a long time, particularly in those days.
What were the drugs that he started taking then? What got him on the road to it?
Well, these are pharmaceutical drugs. So it's not like saying he took smack and cocaine.
Uppers and downers, right? Just to keep you going on the road away.
No. It's like these days it'd be Oxy.
Or
painkillers.
Vicodin or something like that.
In the last year of his life, there's an extraordinary figure. I don't have it in front of me.
You mentioned it on a previous podcast.
He had 9,000 pills prescribed to him by one doctor.
His personal physician, Dr. George Nikolopoulos?
Dr. Nick, yeah. Mm-hmm. Hence the Simpsons Dr. Nick as well. It's a play on that. The last 9 months of his life. But in the last 2 years of his life, again, there were something like 20,000 different pills prescribed. But he had injectables, he had patches, kinds of stuff.
And his excuse was that he had a problem with his colon, I believe, right? And he actually did. It was enlarged.
Yeah, but because he took so many fucking drugs, that's why, yeah.
Problem no one was taking care of him. No one was there.
They were all sucking off the fatted teat, you know?
Oh, nicely put.
Well, I mean, who the fuck says to... You know, in the 70s.
The money.
Don't forget there's no rehab.
Yeah.
You know, Amy hadn't invented rehab yet in the 70s. You know, it didn't exist. Mm. There wasn't a case of let's get you to rehab. It was, oh, you're feeling a bit fucked up. A few pills. Here you go, man. And then at 3 a.m., I'll have a double cheeseburger with some Mars bars in
Food was his thing as well.
Food is a big junky thing.
Yeah.
you know, when you're out of your brain on painkillers, you like ice cream.
Do you know who told me about a lot about food? Glenn Hughes, who I did a book with a few years ago.
Well, he was addicted to food, wasn't he?
Ah, no, I can debunk that quite neatly for you.
Let's get on to Glenn.
Well, we'll quickly talk about Glenn.
Well, let's do that.
Because he hasn't been in the podcast for a while.
No, God.
He told me that when you take Coke for 6 days or something, don't sleep, what your body craves most at that point is sugar and fat.
Right.
Because that's what bodies crave when they've been hibernating, right? Uh-huh. So as a result, you cram a million donuts down your face and beer and whatever and all that sugary stuff.
Uh-huh.
The thing you're referring to was a story in Kerrang.
Right. Oh, about Glenn being a food addict.
Yeah. Where Gary Moore said that he was addicted to Mars bars or whatever the fuck it was.
Okay.
What had actually happened was that Gary had said Glenn is addicted to cocaine, but Jeff Barton took it upon himself to change the word cocaine to Mars bar. Did you not know that?
Fuck that guy!
Jeff told me that himself.
Well, that's terrible.
Glenn didn't notice, so I told Glenn.
Okay.
And it made him feel better.
Okay. Well, listen, to get it back to Elvis.
No, it's relevant though, right? Because
when you're a junkie,
we're talking about people who stuff terrible amounts of food down their throats.
When you're
there is
a junkie, it's not a case of going 6 days without food.
Yeah,
it's
right.
A case of overeating continually because you have a very, very sweet tooth.
Yeah.
And
but it's a comfort thing,
the only junkies that get thin are the ones that don't have any money and have to peddle their ass to buy junk, so they end up living a life of shit.
You don't see any fat heroin addicts.
Elvis Presley?
Heroin?
Jim Morris?
Heroin?
What do you think a painkiller is?
It's an opiate of some kind.
What is heroin?
It's got a different name.
It's an opiate.
All right, yeah. You make a good
from
point.
From the poppy, okay?
Okay.
Oxycontin.
All right, go on.
100 times stronger than heroin.
Again.
Same thing.
All right.
Okay. When you are a junkie and you have a 24-hour chef who's prepared to deep fry you.
Right. Deep fried bacon, wasn't it? Or something heinous like that. Something
peanut butter.
Peanut butter.
Peanut butter with burger, bacon,
and you always
cheese.
Ate the same thing.
Yeah.
Sliced tomatoes and grits or
but
something. Properly
deep fried.
Yeah.
3 a.m. Then at 5 a.m, you know what? I'm a bit more peckish. Let's have another one of those.
He famously got his crew onto his private plane in the middle of the night and they fucked off across the country to get peanut butter and jelly. Well, we call them subs, I guess, like a giant baguette.
Now, who else would do that but a fucking junkie out of his
I don't
brain?
If I could do it, I would do it.
I can't even
get
down
the
stairs. Listen, I fancy that as well at 3 a.m. sometimes, but to get my ass down the stairs to the kitchen, nah, bollocks.
If there's a private plane waiting,
I know, let's get in a limo, get on the private plane, and wow, can I have more of those pills? Yeah, let's definitely get on the plane, you know.
Would you, given Elvis's access to all this stuff, would you have fallen down the rabbit hole the way
fuck
he did?
Yeah.
I think it's hard to deny that you would, right? In his position, desperate, rich,
I mean, don't forget, we
young.
Talk about, you know, Zeppelin or whoever it might be, and we've gone, well, they were writing the rules. You know, there were no rules. These days, at least you can look back and go,
well, there's a precedent.
Well, there's a mistake waiting to be made. But the fact with Elvis is that who could he look to?
Yeah.
Who had lived like Elvis?
Yeah. Right.
Who had lived like Elvis?
Poor bastard, really. I feel really
Nero.
Sorry for him.
Who?
Oh,
Nero.
Nero, Caligula. You know, those are the nearest kind of... you know, the serpent wasn't just in Elvis's garden. It was wrapped around his neck.
Bloody hell. It's a terrible story. Great music, though.
Well, it's terribly sad.
It's incredibly sad.
But then, you know...
It's only 42 when he died.
Is he dead, Joel?
He's dead. They found him arse in the air. He's dead.
Is he, Joel?
He's listening.
Whoa, the lights just went off
lights
in
just
the studio.
Went out. He's fucking listening. See, he's not dead.
That's a sign that Elvis lives.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at UH1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Dead Rock Stars with Mick Wall and Joel McIver.
Am I right in saying that he pretty much did, for the years of the 70s, he just did Vegas, right? That was pretty much what he did. Or did he do other
stuff?
No, he did do tours.
He did Madison Square and things like that, but they became less and less... as he became less and less able. Mm. He used to call it his TCB tours.
Take care of business. Very much, man.
There you go, yeah. They would leave for like 6 weeks at a time, come back, stockpile loads of drugs, go back out for 6 weeks. But on the road, in Vegas, or at home, at the mansion, same guys, the Memphis Mafia, they called
them. Yeah, right, Red West, Sunny West.
All these guys that he'd grown up with that were just like a circle of yes men.
Until they broke away and they wrote that story, didn't they? Called Elvis. What happened?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, in the end, everybody was made money out of Elvis. Mm. Everybody.
I wonder if Elvis's most important role, looking back, is as a precedent of where not to fuck up and how not to, you know, get some demon to look after your career and give him that much.
Well, it can be seen that way, but it doesn't seem to work, does it? Or we wouldn't have a podcast, you know. Jim Morrison's two huge influences were Elvis Presley and Frank Sinatra. Mm. Robert Plant, Elvis Presley. John Lennon, Elvis Presley.
No one fell from as great a height as Elvis.
No, that's true. But then no one has ever flown as high as he did. It's just extraordinary to think what might have been if the Colonel hadn't come along and just completely ruined the whole thing, poisoned the well.
Was he writing his own songs, Elvis?
No.
So creative capital is not an issue here because he didn't have any. He was a great singer. That was what he did. He sang
other
people's songs.
Well, he was a great singer.
An interpreter of other people's tunes.
And what they used to do was, if you had a song for Elvis, the idea was, okay, well, you have to say it's by you and Elvis. And Elvis will get 50% of that.
That happens to this day.
Of course it does. Mm. But, I mean, you know, David Bowie famously wrote...
David Bowie.
Golden years.
Golden years.
Golden years.
Did he know?
Written for Elvis.
I have a funny story about
that. And Elvis rejected it.
I've told you this story before, but I'm just going to say
no,
it.
No, please
right?
do, yes. Does this have anything to do with Glenn?
No, it's not. It's the other guy I did, but with Woody Whimsey. I wrote Woody's book a couple of years ago.
Can we just remind people who Woody is?
Oh, yeah, we can do that. Woody Whimsey is the last man standing of the Spiders from Mars, which was Bowie's backup band on various albums, including Ziggy Stardust.
As opposed to Woody from the Bay City Rollers.
Mm.
To get that clear.
No, you're quite right.
Clear.
No, that's important.
Or Woody in the Faces.
Indeed. And
or Woody Guthrie.
In the middle of the recording of one of the albums, I've forgotten which one it was. It was either Ziggy Stardust or possibly Loud Insane. Bowie fucked off to New York to see Elvis play. So this would have been 71 or 72. I can't remember
72.
Which one it was. Right, yeah, yeah. And the great thing about this is that by then, Elvis was playing to a load of suits. So the audience was not full of dramatic-looking people. What did Bowie wear to go and see
a
Elvis?
Dress.
No, the full Ziggy.
All right.
The full red mullet, the full gear, probably 10-inch platforms, massive shoulders covered in sparkle dust.
Huge and balls
And this is
out.
The sweet bit. He arrived late to the show, but his seat was at the front. So Elvis was already on stage giving it, wow, thank you. And Ziggy had to walk all the way past all these fuckers and sit down and take his seat pretty much where the spotlights were. And he was incredibly embarrassed. He wasn't loving it and going, hey, I'm David. No. He was incredibly embarrassed. I love that story.
Bit you always neglect to mention, though, is where Elvis says to him from the stage, hurry up, take your seat, ma'am.
Take a seat, ma'am. You look just like a diamond dog or something.
No, ma'am.
Oh, ma'am. Yeah. I'm sorry. Take a seat, miss. Nice. We used to call the haircut a mullet or something. So, where were we up to?
You're still not getting it. I'm saying Elvis thought he was a girl.
No, I did grasp that. I just
he didn't say mullet.
No, I know, I added that
he
bit.
Had a,
no, I got it. I did get it. No,
a girl.
He thought it was a girl.
It
was a great joke.
You didn't kind of allow it to breathe, though,
blossom,
did you? No,
blossom.
you shat on it. You shat on my flower.
So poor old Elvis. He spends the 70s getting iller and iller, sicker and sicker, fatter and fatter. And the one thing you cannot
higher
do...
Higher and higher.
The one thing you cannot do in rock music is get fat. You just can't. I think your mate Jimmy Page said... Led Zeppelin could not have done the return gig at the O2 in 07 if he'd got fat or bald. Can't do that either.
Right.
It's true, right?
Is that my reunion out the door then?
You have other skills, other nice things that are nice about you.
No would have hurt, but you've got other... That's like saying, you know, when girls say to a guy, you know, I really love
just
you...
Just not in that way.
As a friend. You may as well just say, fuck off and never come talk to me ever again, yeah. You twat.
It's not relevant to the conversation, is it? He was briefly engaged to...
Priscilla.
Well, no, Ginger Alden, I was going to say, in the last couple of years.
The model.
Yeah. And he attracted these females who I think didn't stay that. I can't be that pleasant Classy. Hanging about with Lovely Elvis girl. At that point. Apparently, all he used to like doing was lying in his bed reading his spiritualist books, all that kind of nonsense that kept him going a little bit while trying to do these fucking gigs in front of these people. I've watched a few videos like you of him in the last few years of his life, and he just looks ridiculous. Mm. Yeah, the karate moves. Even if he was wearing cool clothes, which of course he's not because it's Elvis in Vegas.
Sorry, what are you saying? You don't like the jumpsuits?
I'm not sure they...
But they influenced
sort of dated well. Yeah, yeah. But they look crap, don't they?
No.
You need to be like the geezer out of the darkness to wear that
geezer?
Stuff. Completely
Geezer's
thin.
Geezer's got a grey.
You need to weigh about 7 stone to get away wearing a catsuit.
In fairness to Elvis, he did look the part, you know, from 68 to 69.
Yeah, right, yeah.
But once you get into that...
Yeah. Once you get a few subcutaneous lipids...
Yeah,
attached to you, yeah. Then you can't pull it off quite
as
well.
Is that like male tits?
And his
moves.
And his hair looked ridiculous, and it was just nonsensically crap. And what saddens me a lot is that, you know, we all get old. We all look shit compared to the way we used to. Apart from
well,
you,
Nick, yeah, no, yeah, speak me, for yourself, oh, yeah, you know.
Compared to
my
our,
wife, I get better as I get older.
Do you know, my daughter found a passport photo of me from about 15 years ago and said, wow, Dad, you used to be quite hot. I was like, oh, why don't you just punch me in the face while you're at it?
Yeah, my daughters go, wow, Dad, you used to have hair.
It's cruel, isn't it?
I still have. I just choose to not reveal it.
Yeah, it just comes out of my nose rather than
on
my
back. No, I just wear it like a pelt these days.
It's on my Shrek feet. Fucking hell. The producer just told us we've only got 10 minutes left, by the way.
As long as that. So right, keep padding.
Any more facial hair jokes. We're heading downhill to the inevitable and tragic death of Elvis Presley.
And afterlife. I mean, we need to talk about that as well, because at the end of the day, you know, it's a sad story.
He's been flippant, but found dead. So what happened? Yeah, August 77, what happened to him?
Well, we know what happened. He OD'd and he died. But what really happened?
I was building up to that point.
I think we know that.
The story is, I'll tell you what the ostensible facts are, that he was on the loo. Ginger Alden found him face forward with his arse in the air, having rigor mortis having settled in. So the idea is that he had a massive heart attack.
It settled in as well because he was constipated. That's another major symptom of being a junkie, is you don't shit for days. So he was taking tons of laxatives and he's on there trying to squeeze one out from his bottom, possibly the front as well.
Maybe he had a heart attack because of the effort.
I don't even know if he had a heart attack. I think all that was bullshit.
Stroke?
Matt, no, he overdosed.
Oh,
the man was taking a shitload of drugs.
So his heart stopped because of the amount of drugs in his system.
Whatever an overdose does to you, you know, whatever happened to Janice and Jimmy and all the rest of them, that's what happened to Elvis. But they glossed over it. The post-mortem was a joke. It was, you know, it was, friend of Red West, you know, or something like that. Out of respect for the family. You know, it was all that bullshit.
Well, keep those details secret for the moment.
And then it came out as the years went by that actually this guy was a pincushion, you know. But here's my point, is what really happened to him was, you know, we talk about marks for career move. John Lennon famously said when he was told, there were two quotes. Johnny Rotten was being interviewed by Rolling Stone when the news broke. And they said, oh, Johnny, Elvis died. And he went, good riddance to bad rubbish. And John Lennon went, good career move.
Did he? Didn't he say something like Elvis died years ago when he went in the army? Was that earlier or later?
Look, you're shitting on my fucking joke again.
Diminished it.
You've shat on my flower twice.
Say the joke again.
You are the colonel.
What did Lennon...
And I am Elvis.
What did Lennon actually say?
Fat Elvis.
What did Lennon actually say?
No, fuck.
The moment's passed. If you want to hear it, everyone, just go back and you'll hear it.
So suddenly there's the Elvis industry. Do you know that the day after he died... there were so few mourners that they actually went as far as trying to publicise it because it was like it didn't have a thing. People had been seeing him going for years. It didn't come as a shock to the people of Memphis. But then they drummed it up. So by the time of the funeral, you've now got these pictures of these motorcades.
Cortege.
Hundreds and thousands of people lining the street.
Elvis, come back to us.
But that was almost another colonel move, drumming the whole thing up.
Well, it was or it wasn't?
It was.
So it was.
So the point is that by the time Elvis went, he'd been going so long, it wasn't like... If he'd died in 68 or 58...
Yeah, right.
Now you've got Jim Morrison, James Dean, Jimi Hendrix. But when he died, it was like he may as well have died of old age.
Yeah, I mean, he was 42, which is old for a rocker.
But I mean, in terms of the perception of him and whether he was interesting anymore, you know, all the pictures had come out of him looking dreadful, been going on for years.
And the youth didn't give a fuck about him, right? They were listening to The Damned.
Yeah. Well,
you know, the Ramones. Blondie. What was cool in 1977 in America? The Eagles.
The Eagles.
Brilliant.
Fleetwood Mac.
Fleetwood Mac.
So, now comes the point where Elvis sells more records dead than alive. Now comes the huge industry of people that, you know, when you do have an Elvis tribute act, I saw one recently. It's the full Vegas look.
Has to be.
It has to be.
No one, you know.
By the 1990s, you've got Dred Zeppelin.
Oh, yeah, right.
Which is a short guy dressed as Fat Elvis doing Led Zeppelin songs in a reggae style.
I love that. They had a lot of coverage in Kerrang.
I wrote the stories and I appeared on stage with them at the Marquee. Yeah.
Doing what? Singing?
Playing guitar.
Bloody hell, mate.
They had a shtick where every night at every gig they get some guy to come on, dress him up on guitar, and at the end of the first number they would sack him and he'd have to leave the stage in
Brilliant,
shame.
Really.
And they'd get the crowd to go, boo, boo, get off, get off. They tore Elvis going, you're spying the whole fucking thing. Get out of here. Be gone from Telvis's sight.
They must be still going, surely.
Probably.
I hope so. Probably. I do hope so. I saw a brilliant Elvis impersonation show the other day. The guy just mesmerised me. He had all the moves right down. He had a TCB necklace, he had the hair, he did all the shit. I love it.
Well, you can now be married in Vegas by Elvis.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In fact, I know someone that was.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, do you...
I hereby I pronounce you a man of wife.
You take this man to be your lawful... I can't do it. You do it. Lawful wedded wife.
What do you mean, a lawful wedded wife? Thank you.
And you have to go, instead of going, I do, you go,
See, what's amazing is that we all have this image of Elvis.
I put it
to you, Mick, that there is no other rock star that everyone can do an impression of quite as readily as Elvis.
Right,
we can all do this stupid stuff, can't we? And they, oh, look, the white fucking costume and laugh at all that. Who else? We don't
but
do that about
do
McCartney.
Bill
we don't do that about Lennon.
You know,
we don't do it about...
Ozzy!
We don't do it about any other dead person.
Sharon!
People do Freddie impressions, I suppose, don't they? They get up
do
and
they?
Dance around. Yeah, I've got a mate who does it professionally.
But they don't sit around in the armchair going, thank you very much.
I ain't got any more drugs than cheeseburger, ma'am.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Every red-blooded male.
And you, man.
Every red-blooded male in the world thinks he can do a good Elvis impression. And a Chris Eubank impression as well.
And a what?
Chris Eubank. Is this my moment when I get to hear my Chris Eubank? Chris Eubank famously said, I am not merely a boxer. When I step into the ring, I am also an artist. So everybody thinks they can do Sean Connery, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Elvis Presley and Chris Eubank.
Hang on. Sean Connery. James.
Yeah, you're right in there.
James Moneypenny.
Yeah. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, fuck that
Get to
guy.
The chopper. Yeah, all that stuff. Right, so the point is that Elvis is up there with these idiotic impressions. Everyone can do one. No one does that about George Harrison. No one does that about bloody David Bowie. Well,
hang on. you do on every
I've
fucking episode.
I've talked myself
David.
Right out of that one. All right, good. So he died.
I am many different personae.
Anthony Newley.
Tommy Steele.
The
little
Colonel.
White Bull, the Little White Bull.
If anyone doesn't know, we call this podcast Dead Rock Stars because they can't sue you if they're dead. And when I come to talk about...
No, we
about,
call it Dead Rock Stars because it's about dead rock stars.
Well, I like
and
to
the
think
reason we
mesh.
Do Dead Rock
too
Stars mesh. Is because they can't sue
can't
you.
Can't bloody sue us. So Colonel Parker died in, what, 2002? 2006? I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
Was it like that? He died. No one cared.
No one cared.
Yeah, no one cared apart from his wife. He died saying... You fuckers, I've got the last laugh. My wife knows all the details. She knows where all the bodies are buried.
All
she knows
wives
the lot.
Know all details.
Yeah.
That's
I don't know
next
if
podcast.
I don't know if she's still extant, but the point is he's dead and I don't think anyone mourned him.
Right.
I mean, it became well known how he treated Elvis and how he'd exploited the hell out of him to the point of death and beyond.
Right? No, definitely beyond is the point we're at now.
He's the best-selling dead artist of all, isn't he? He's sold incredible amounts of tat.
Yeah.
And reissues come out every 20 minutes.
But as well as the tat, you know, a little less conversation.
Oh, I fucking hated that.
I loved that.
Shut up.
Fuck you, man! That's Elvis's finest moment!
A big beat version of a Elvis song. Stop it. Stop. Sing another song that everyone likes. I'm coming with trap.
I'm having a crack.
I can't walk out. Didn't the Fine Young Cannibals do a great version of that?
I hated the Fine Young Cannibals.
But you liked the Junky XL remix of A Little Less Conversation.
A little less conversation, a little more action.
Let's not forget, you also like Metal Machine Music by Lou Reed, I thought I'd throw down.
Oh, really?
What did Elvis think of that album?
Well, had he lived long enough to have heard it, he no doubt would have enjoyed it. I don't know.
75. He was alive when it came out.
Yeah, he loved it. He used to end his set with it.
I know, he hated disco. He used to refer to the...
You mentioned disco. Look what happens when you mention disco.
Is that your fire alarm? No, was it your fire alarm?
Right, come on, let's wind this.
Let's wind it. All right, what time is it?
Time to go.
Oh, is it time to go? All right, Mick. So, look, frankly, Elvis died. We're sad, very sad, because it's such a tragic, bloody story. Music's wonderful.
Yeah, I've had enough now.
So, how do we get from Elvis Presley to our next dead rock star? Well, both Elvis and our next dead rock star surnames begin with P.
Coincidence?
I think not. While Elvis was out at the front, bloody hell, we really are struggling, our next artist was to be found at the back of the stage. Now, who plays at the back of the stage? Penultimately, Elvis's Mary's the Name, His Latest Flame, was covered by Brian May and our next dead rock star. And finally, and this is horrible, while Elvis was infamous for his impacted stools, I'll say that again, impacted stools, our next dead rock star would also have an impacted stool at the end of every gig. This has been a yet another fantastic 7Digital production produced
even if
by,
we say so ourselves.
Produced by a geezer called Ian Callahan, who's pretty weird, to
gorgeous
be honest.
But
he looks nice.
Kind of Elvis, like a young Elvis.
He looks after his hair.
Like a young Elvis.
He looks like a young Elvis. And frankly, I'm going to say goodbye to you. Goodbye.
Dead Rockstars has left the building.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.